Welcome to Dakota Midday Tech Radio for Friday, October 4th. Our 800 number is 1-800-524-3604. You can also drop us an email. Send it to midday@sdpb.org. Today's panelists, Matt Guru, Joel Brovelite joins us today. Hello, Joel.
Hey.
How are you?
Great.
And nobody knows that you just walked in and put the headphones on and said hello.
It couldn't have been more last minute.
You have a Toronto Maple Leafs hat and a Canadian water bottle.
You know,
did you jump ship in the last since last show or something?
Yes, I'm Canadian. No, I'm kind of a Canadiophile, and I got these at Canada Tire when I was in Canada this last summer, and just so happens that they're together. Normally, they're not. Well, that's not true.
Let's talk about tech, eh?
Yeah.
I'm always aware.
Nine Clouds Bro Founder John T. Meyer is going to keep us on task today. Right?
Better him than me.
Just more Canadian jokes. That's what I'm going to do.
All right. Maybe that'll be our clip of the week or something. We'll come up with something. Also joining us on the phone from Peer, a technology integration specialist, joins us, Jeff Litterick. Hello, Jeff.
Hello.
Good to hear you again. And we got an interesting show here. We got a weird cross-section of... You know, revenge porn and batteries or surge protectors going crazy and Silk Road, the Amazon.com of Vice is shuttered by the FBI, and an interesting story behind that that's got murder and intrigue and lots of things. So it's a heck of a show, and I know you've got some updates on Mac things, as you always do.
Always.
Want to let folks know the place to get in our face is on facebook.com/techradio. If you'd like to see the infographic of the day, it is up there now.
The week.
Okay, well today I'm trying to make it topical. So it's today we're going to present an infographic to you, and this particular one happens to be about battery life, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I think... we want people to go to the Facebook page. It's tough to talk about infographics on the radio. What is an infographic? It's a visual piece. It's visual storytelling where you're taking information and displaying it in a graphical way. And so one of the things we're going to add here to our Facebook page, kind of enhance our web content throughout the between shows, because we can't always come to you guys only but a couple times a month, is sharing some infographics. And so this is one that we made over at my company at Lemonly about mobile... kind of the growth of how cell phones have changed, just in general, not anything specific to the iPhone or to an Android. But what's interesting is we've seen the speed increase 20% by cellular speed. We've seen Wi-Fi increase by 30 times. But all along this growth, battery performance has still continued to lag. I mean, the biggest thing that we always complain about is how long will my cell phone last? How long is the battery? So... in the infographic, it talks about how battery performance ranks as the least satisfying aspect of all smartphones. And four times the customer complaints about battery have quadrupled since 2008.
Well, they finally got phones to where I could plug it in overnight and I'd be fine, but I could actually make it to the PM. You remember the phones where you had those things plugged in? When Android first came out, you were constantly tethered to a wall somewhere.
Sure.
So I think my satisfaction's gone up a little bit. But it would be great to...
Well, I think that, you know, Joel or Jeff can comment on this, but my take is that as the phones have gotten better, you know, they say, hey, battery has increased by 20%, but then they're also like, but now we have a 40-megapixel camera, and we're doing this, and we're running
these
apps.
There's 18 more processors that we're running.
So you then just take up that increased battery.
You know, and for a while, the big deal, of course, was how small can you get the phone? You know, certainly back before... smartphones were the norm. I like to call them phones and all other phones dumb phones. But back before there were smartphones, you know, it was how small could you get it? And the smaller you get, of course, the less room you have for battery. So that's always kind of a struggle.
That's a big hardware piece, I'm imagining.
Yeah, it's
in the iPhone, that's got to be one of the
weight-wise and space-wise, it's the largest portion.
I would guess, yeah. So we'll put that on the Facebook page, facebook.com/techradio. It's kind of hard to just talk about an infographic, but we'd encourage you to go check it out.
Well, the last one I posted from you was in September. It was about the 9/11 Memorial Museum.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And it was an interactive deal, and it was a really cool infographic. And I found that on the 9/11 Memorial site, and I'm like, hey, local guy sort of has graphic that goes big. To me, it was kind of a big deal. I know, you know, maybe you're not so much known around town here as that, but you're getting these graphics out there to some major players.
Yeah, that was a really proud moment of piece of work we got to work on for the actual 9/11 memorial in New York City. And this one we're posting today is from Samsung. We've also worked with Major League Baseball, Marriott Hotels, Nike, United Nations. So it's been fun. It's a really unique niche that our company kind of serves, but we love to kind of do visual storytelling.
Yeah, so check back at the Facebook page, and we'll have that graphic for you on the satisfaction of battery life today. So also in the sort of battery realm, I know this isn't a recall on batteries. Thank you for correcting me, Jeff Litterick from The Open. But APC, and many of us probably have APC surge protectors and battery backups and other things in our homes and in our businesses. Most likely you do. But there's a pretty big surge protector recall going on right now, Jeff. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, 15 million of them. Now, these are mainly older models of surge protectors, and they go all the way from the, you know, the cheap $10 ones all the way up to the expensive $50, $60 ones. And they were sold by Best Buy, Circuit City, and all the name brands. On our Facebook page, I put a link out to the actual recall page that lists the models affected with some photos and the contact page. APC will replace with a newer model or like-kind surge protector, and you do want to do this. The recall is because they are overheating and either melting or starting fires. And as we know, we all collect surge protectors. State government actually has quite a few of these. Some we found up here already that we're sending in for the recall because they just kind of, you know, spray up. Every time you need some more electrical ports, and who does it anymore, you just go buy a surge protector. You don't think of it. It's laying on your carpet behind your TV stands and all that kind of stuff. You're really going to want to check that out because the last thing you really want is, as it gets older, a meltdown and a fire because of it. So it's a pretty big deal. But it's pretty easy, and it looks pretty easy to get the replacement. So just check your surge protectors for model, and if they need to be replaced, replace them.
I tend to just plug these things in, shove them under the desk, and forget about them. And as you say this, I'm thinking of all the places in my home that there are surge protectors because not only surge protectors, but just sort of those just kind of a splitter for the, you know, for power.
Yeah,
you power
know,
strip.
Yeah, I like to call, we should probably talk about that. Maybe that could be another show. We've done it several times in the past, but there's a big difference between surge protectors, surge suppressors, and what I like to call multi-plugs, which is about what I think everybody actually has. You know, it might have a little fuse in it that, you know, if something happens, it might sort of protect something, but most of the surge protectors, I'm putting that in quotes, aren't really anything more than just a multi-plug.
Just dropped air quotes.
So,
thanks for pointing that out.
Yeah, well, yeah, you, so, you know, as Jeff says, go check it out, but don't think that you have a, this is my words of wisdom for today, don't think that you have any kind of actual surge protection if you have what I like to term a multi-plug, because if you didn't pay, you know, at least $400 for it, there's very little, if any, protection.
We haven't talked about this for a long time on the show.
It's been a while.
And maybe it's time for just a quick recap. You know, and I think my lead into this last time was people are spending thousands of dollars on their devices.
Sure.
And they're plugging it in to something that, you know, maybe they're breaking the third prong off the grounding plug, and they're shoving it in an outlet or doing something. But there are a variety of these outlet strips.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them actually have batteries built into them. There are a backup for a few minutes.
Battery
backups are built right into the plug strips. They look just like a plug strip. They're maybe just a little bit wider. So there's that variety. And then all the way up to these, you know, more things that look about the size of a loaf of bread and bigger. You know, depending on how much you're plugging in.
Yeah, or, you know, could be an entire, you know, computer rack-sized piece of hardware, depending on what you're trying to protect and trying to back up. And
yeah. Is there a handy guide for how much you can plug into one of these or how big a one you need for your setup at home?
You know, any surge protector or, power cleaning, you know, it's another one we could talk about, mm-hmm. or battery backup product is going to have a rated amount of power that it can hold, you know, in watts.
Okay.
So that should either be on the box or hopefully it came with directions. If it doesn't say that, then really it's no more protection than, you know, the old style extension cords with three plugins on them, or, you know, those little brown or white things you can buy for 80 cents at Target or Menards that just give you multiple plugs. You know, if you're paying under $10 for a surge protector, if it says that, you're really not getting any surge protection, and certainly not getting any protection from, you know, dirty power, whether that be a brownout or just fluctuation. If your lights dim on and off, as happens, that can really affect your digital devices. And you've got to pay APC, the company we're talking about, is kind of a leader in that technology. And Belkin, of course, makes all sorts of devices. But if you're not paying $40, $50, $70, $100 for a device that either has battery backup or regulates the power signal coming in to a steady amount, then you really are not getting a lot of protection from a surge. And I recently talked to somebody who there wasn't a lightning strike at their house, but apparently it was a mile away, but they were in the country, and it traveled through the ground and blew out basically all the electronics in their house. Insurance covered it, but had they had, you know, what would amount to probably $1,000 worth of surge suppressors, and they even make protection for whole houses.
Sure,
If they had that, they could have avoided, you know, the deductible and loss of data, and it can be a pretty serious deal. But
and it can even get a little bit more confusing because many of the surge protectors, you do get what you pay for, and they all have different ratings. Some will handle lightning, some will not. So it can get kind of confusing out there. You really do have to really watch your labels, look for UL certifications, and really read the fine print on a lot of the stuff you buy.
If I've just got a laptop at home, not a big desktop computer and a monitor and all this stuff I'm going to hook up to, am I okay without a surge protector or some kind of power cleaning? Because it's running off a battery, right?
Well,
not plugging it into the wall.
As long as it's not plugged into the wall, yeah, you're as safe as anything. Of course, if power jumps, you know, as lightning can do, then of course nothing is going to really
what
be
you're
protected.
Really happening, and I've seen this a bit, when you have bad power, not so much, you know, lightning strikes and stuff, but bad power where you have brownouts and light flickering, is that power brick that you do plug into the wall for your laptop will burn out and go out. They can break. And that's what's most likely to happen with a laptop is, and this is true of any digital device, it's the AC to DC power conversion unit that's going to go out first from the stress. But in many cases, those are built into the device, and they're not so easily removable. But for laptops, you do see that. If you have bad power, you tend to go through those power supply bricks pretty.
I do need a protection for my iPad and my computer and my laptop just as well as my desktop computer.
Yeah, as long as it's plugged into the wall.
Okay.
You know, running off battery, it wouldn't be.
Well, we do need to take a break. We have a lot of things to talk about on today's show, but we will get back to that after we thank a few people. I want to mention, of course, that you can interact with us on the show. Our phone number is 1-800-524-3604. Our email address is midday, MIDDAY, at sdpb.org. And, of course, if you just pop off to our Facebook page, facebook.com/techradio, you'll see links for all the stuff that we're going to talk about on today's show and we have been talking about. And we'll be right back after this. And welcome back to Dakota Midday Tech Radio on this opening of October, and it doesn't maybe seem like that to our West River
yikes
listeners. Who we're sorry you're stuck inside, but hope you're enjoying the show.
An employee of mine is supposed to run, I believe it's on Sunday, there's a marathon, Black Hills Marathon out there, and so she texted me last night and said, I think I'm going to hit the, she's from Rapids, and I'm going to hit the road tonight because my mom said if I don't make it out there, you know, I might not make it. And so I don't think she'll be running 26 miles on Sunday, but we'll see.
Well, we hope that you are safe and warm wherever you're at. I hear there's almost 2 feet of snow on the ground up by, you know, Lead and Deadwood. And I imagine the motorcycles aren't put away and the snowmobile's been taken out even quite yet. So,
I have a question to ask Joel here that I'm going to complain about. We talked about, you know, all the new iPhone stuff. I can't remember. Last time we had a show, had they come out yet? I don't know. It was like the week of, maybe.
I think they announced them, but they were not available.
Yeah, it wasn't out yet.
I believe we talked about the iPhone.
Yeah. So I think I read an article, or I've seen on Twitter, that other people are experiencing the same problem, but iMessages have been really goofy lately. Have you noticed that at all? Trying to send... So an iMessage is... Essentially, it doesn't use an actual, it's not counted as an actual SMS message. It's from one Apple product to another, iPad, iPhone.
Yeah, it's it uses the same, for those that don't know, the iMessage and text messaging are kind of all encased in one application, the SMS or the message
app. But it's like
app.
A different technology.
Right, yeah. And you can send an iMessage the same way you'd send a text. However, if your recipient is using an iOS device, whether it's an iPad, well, it doesn't have to actually be an iOS device. I should say you
really?
Can do it on a computer,
desktop
yeah, computer, a Macintosh device. Computer, or an Apple computer, sorry. And you can send a message without having to, you know, incur any text messaging things, although that isn't a big deal for most people. So the problem you're having is?
Well, I'm getting these, like, 90% sent iMessages. In layman's terms, the iMessages are the blue ones. The
right.
text messages are the green ones.
Correct.
And they get almost, they almost send, and then they just stop. They just, and
yeah.
I've saw other people complaining about
yeah,
this.
that is a known problem that
iOS 7?
Yeah, with iOS 7, which was just released on the 18th of last month. It was after our last show. Apple is working on a fix. There have been two iOS 7 updates since the release. And I think there's supposed to be another one relatively soon. It is something they're aware of, and it doesn't happen to everybody. And I'm not sure if I've heard what it's been narrowed down to. But, yes, if you're sending iMessages, basically device to device, not through a computer, some users have had
so
trouble.
I'm not asking you to solve it, but I just wanted others to know that even the story here on ABC News, I guess when I searched about iMessages, it's not just you. iMessage is not sending for some
Yeah,
iOS
you know, I think
users.
The funny thing is a lot of folks don't know that there's a difference between iMessage
yeah.
and text messages because your phone just kind of changes them without telling you, which is great because it, you know, it uses less bandwidth and less services from your provider. However,
yep.
some people may think maybe having issues sending texts, but it's really iMessage because if you send to another user with an iPhone, which is a lot of people, you may have an issue. So if you're having problems with your text messages on your iPhone, it may not be the text messages themselves. It may be iOS, but there should be a fix coming soon.
I saw kind of a meme about it, like making fun of non-Apple users because it said, get an iPhone, girl, a lot of green on my screen or something like that because the green being the regular text messages.
I remember when that first came out, a little anecdote, there was a difference, but a lot of people didn't know it. And I would see users come on and I would see people when they switched from another phone to an iPhone, I'd see, oh, you got an iPhone. And they said, how did you know?
Yeah.
And I wouldn't tell them because, the whole Scotty complex.
Yeah, we have a call. Dave is from Rapid City, and he has a question about power conditioners, I guess. Hello, Dave.
Hey.
Good morning.
I've had a big battery backup, power surge backup thing, and it sat there. It was very heavy, very expensive. And I've always wondered, well, it's only good if I'm around when the power goes down because I leave my systems up. And if I'm not there for 20 minutes or whatever time it allows to power down, what good is it? You know, that's one question.
Okay.
And then the other question I had, I have a power conditioning unit that I've used in audio gear, and I just wondered if that actually plugs into the wall, three-prong plug in all your, just like a power strip, only conditions the power,
mm-hmm.
and if that's the same thing, and if it's better or worse.
Okay.
Well, what I would say is, first thing, if you've got a newer model, and probably wouldn't even have to be that new, because I knew these were available at least 10 years ago, there are several battery backups, and anything that's a battery backup is almost always automatically a power conditioner. And for those that don't know, again, power conditioning would be kind of normalizing the power signal that's coming in. So if there's any fluctuation, it's sending regular power to your device. But there are a lot of them on the market that also plug into your computer via USB. and it will sense that it's running on battery, and it will tell your computer, hey, running on battery, you need to go ahead and shut down. There are lots of them on the market, probably too many for me to name, but there are several on the market that will do that, so I would search for that capability. As well as there are a few software programs that will sense that and start running an auto shutdown for you. But that's mostly software there.
Getting back to his question, though, if he's not there when the power goes out and his battery backup system keeps his computer system alive for 20 minutes, 35 minutes, whatever, and shuts down, and then the battery goes out and his computer loses power, is that any better?
Well, that's why I'm recommending you get either a third device or another battery backup that will tell your computer to shut down in kind of a normal way, so that you don't, you know, it doesn't just pull the plug and you possibly lose devices. So it's only better if you can get to it in time. But there is another way that will allow your computer to shut down without losing data.
Yeah. Okay. It's really easy. If you do have the USB cable, when you plug it in, your computer will just think it's kind of like a laptop. It will see the battery of the UPS. And just like you have a laptop where it will auto shut down at certain times or go into different power saving modes, your computer will act just like it's on battery on a laptop and will perform the same actions, and you set it up the same way. So you can tell it, well, keep running for so long and then shut down, or at 0% battery life, or turn off the hard drives or the monitor and stuff like that. It's really simple nowadays. You just plug it in, and it works just like your laptop battery and the way you set up those power savings.
What about his second question, Joel, on the cleaning for the audio equipment?
Audio equipment is particularly sensitive towards fluctuation in power. So, yeah, I mean, if that's important to you, I would definitely say, power regulator is pretty useful. Again, that won't protect necessarily from, won't necessarily have any battery backup, but it's audio equipment, so that's probably not as big a concern. So,
okay. Dave, did we answer your questions?
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that.
Yep. Well, hey, stay safe.
All right.
And
thanks.
See you, Dave.
And thanks for calling. Let's get back to the questions we were talking about before the call, and we were over on iOS 7.
Mm-hmm.
I was about to ask you how the adoption rate for that was going.
It's pretty serious. I haven't checked what it is today, but it's the vast majority of iOS users have switched. The vast majority of iOS users that have devices that qualify, which basically if you have the original iPad or one of the earlier iPhones, you can't use iOS 7. But other than that, virtually every other newer device in the past 3-4 years is available for, and there's been huge adoption. It's actually, I think, the fastest and largest adoption of a new operating system ever.
Does that have anything to do with the new phones?
That doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the new phones.
Okay. How are those being received?
Sales are, well, you know, this was...
The gold ones,
over,
especially.
Yeah, over the,
on
yeah,
the
gold ones I don't think were available even after the first day until this month. Apple sold, now, we didn't talk about... RIM or BlackBerry kind of going under. Maybe we did, but Apple sold more iPhones in the opening weekend than BlackBerry sold for the entire 6 months before that. So
yeah, that's not surprising.
Yeah.
It's not even surprising. The surprise is that they were sold for like $4 billion, wasn't it? $3 or $4 billion.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying that the sales are very strong.
I think it's a testament to how big of a jump it was to iOS 7 compared to where we were at. So lots of times some of these operating system upgrades are subtle, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And more so, sometimes there are significant changes, but they don't look differently. And
mm-hmm.
so people don't maybe
Yeah, this
jump
is the
in.
Most obvious change. I would say probably the largest change was when third-party apps were made
True.
Available.
Back
and
early
that was,
on.
I think, that maybe iOS 3 or 4. So that was probably the biggest change, but this is the most obvious change because so many things are different.
Yeah, and so I'm
you know, there's a lot of learning curve on that. But overall, I think it's been pretty positive.
If you think of user adoption and you're sitting in a coffee shop and you look at the person who has the same iPhone as you and you look at it and theirs looks completely different and the screen looks, you know, even if they don't understand all the feature changes, they're like, whoa, what's that? I need that.
Well, and one of the things I don't think gets talked about is it was a huge visual change and kind of a functional change, but it seems to have been relatively seamless for most users. Like, there's not a huge learning curve. If you could use the iPhone before, the change to iOS 7 with all its intricacies hasn't been too much for those to bear. I don't hear a lot of call for switching back to iOS 6, though that is possible.
No, I think the biggest problem with adoption in my house was that, you know, passwords are reset. You had to remember, you had to go log into everything that all your apps were already logged into. So
it takes a little longer.
That got blamed on, you know. The problems that they were having got blamed on the operating system, and this is terrible. Why did you do this update? And it was just more to do with the mechanics of the whole situation. But
yeah, certainly it's been good though that there haven't been a lot of stability issues. People haven't had loss of data, which happens in operating system upgrades. And they were pretty quick to run several a security update. And as I mentioned, there have been two iOS 7 updates since release, so make sure you have those if you although updates with the iOS have been pretty good and pretty easy to find, so most people have also adopted the updates.
So on the non-mobile, non-iOS front, we have an update coming for the desktop
operating system, which is kind of getting both of the operating systems closer together and more crossover. I'm really interested in that. If you own an Apple computer, a desktop or a laptop, the next iteration, OS X Mavericks, they've gotten away from naming them after large cats and other
cats left.
After places that you can surf, I suppose.
It's beaches, right?
Yeah. Well, I think places is what they're going with. Okay. I don't think they're tied down, but right now that's a surfing beach, Mavericks. But that's supposed to be Golden Master right now, which for those that know, that means that the developers are getting what might be the final version. And is rumored to be released on the 23rd. And that should be also another big, easy release for them because it will be, I think, download only again. I'm not aware of there being a box version, although there may be. And that's also a very interesting thing. And I suppose rumored again to be $30 like it was the last time, which is pretty inexpensive for a desktop operating system.
I got to say, it's
23rd of October. You said.
Yeah, 1.0 release it's pretty awesome. So I'm anxiously awaiting that. Lots of good features in the next version, I think.
Okay, sounds good. Any other iOS or Mac news we need to talk about before we move on?
Yeah, nothing I can think of other than
I think we covered it.
Yeah,
great.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a couple other things on the show today. I'm going to save a couple of the bigger things for after the next break, but I think we can knock a couple of these out. Twitter IPO, is that being stalled now because of the government shutdown? That is not.
I think that it's probably not helping anything and certainly not going to help their number, but it hasn't changed anything. They happened to they put in for it before the shutdown. And now they're doing the roadshow, so I don't think there's a firm date yet when it's going to be released. But
what I read this morning on the Wall Street Journal was, post the article on Facebook. Was one big doubt over the Twitter IPO was fake accounts because their value making their valuation off of users, right? So how many millions of users people use Twitter, and some people believe investors believe that there's more than 215 million users on the site that are fake accounts,
and now
bots and things like that. So
okay, not just the people that, because every public figure now has a not in front of it, or fake or whatever. So are they're not talking about those people that are actually actively tweeting from an account that isn't them,
spam.
Or it's not.
Yeah, or they might be talking about a user that might sign up a half a dozen times so that they can for whatever reason they can send out tweets or reply to tweets and, all sorts of reasons you might have fake accounts. So I think that's what they're talking about.
Okay. Sorry, I should correct myself there. I wanted to pull that stat up. They said in the IPO that 215 million users are active users. So Twitter has more users than that. And they say that about 5% of those are bots. Sorry, not 215 million.
Okay.
Stand corrected.
Well, Jeff, what is the extent of the Adobe hack that happened? How deep and wide is that, and are there any real concerns for folks that are listening?
Yes, to a certain point. This is a fairly new story, so it may change a little bit over time. But Mm-hmm. Adobe was very seriously hacked for a long period of time. And during that time frame, the hackers would be able to gain access to just about everything Adobe has and knows about you and its own products. They stole all the source code for all their products, and they also were on the e-commerce site. Well, we do not think they got unencrypted versions of credit card numbers and debit cards and stuff like that. I would probably be watching your bank accounts if you've done business directly with Adobe on their websites or through their products. Already you should have gotten a notice from Adobe that your web password has been changed automatically. If you are using the same password on another site, please, which is a very bad thing, please go and change those passwords immediately.
It's a very bad thing that everybody does.
Yeah, this is a big deal on a couple things. For most consumers, it's your web passwords. Make sure you don't use the same password. And just watch your bank accounts if you've done business. For everyone else, is expect a whole bunch of new attacks on Adobe products to come out. The hacking group that did get in is actually a kind of famous hacking group for 0 days and stuff. So we do expect a lot of that source code to be poured over by them and turned into valid attacks to make botnets here fairly quickly.
Well, it's very convenient that it is National Cybersecurity Awareness Month, and everybody needs to be cyberly aware, and we're going to talk about that in the next segment of the show, coming up right after this. And welcome back to Dakota Midday Tech Radio on this Friday, October 4th. We're back with you in 2 weeks, and our panelists today, and hopefully they'll be joining us in 2 weeks as well, Joel Brovelite, active Sioux Falls resident.
What a weird title.
Yeah. Well, I was trying to dovetail into your performance tomorrow night.
Yeah, tomorrow night I'll be playing with the South Dakota Symphony, Mahler 9. I play trombone, and that's what I'll be playing. So
that'll be cool, though.
Yeah,
that's
who doesn't want to hear Mahler 9? I know I do.
I do. John T. Meyer is with us as well, and perhaps not a performance tomorrow, but next week.
Big performance.
Getting married next Friday, so congratulations on that.
Yeah, week from today, so next time I'm on the show, I'll be married.
Regular panel. And Jeff Litterick again from Peer. Thank you for joining us, Jeff, and giving us all the insights we need on this October Cybersecurity Awareness Month. And it sounds big and bad, and I put a link on our Facebook page, facebook.com/techradio. There's a link to the national group that is in charge of our national cybersecurity and homeland in the Department of Homeland Security. So if you want to do some reading up on that. Locally, that impacts us because there's been a lot of bad people trying to do things to South Dakotans via the phone lately, and over the computer, trying to get our personal data and have us sign up for, you know, the Affordable Care Act and a whole bunch of other things that are nefarious in nature. So be aware of all those links that you're clicking on, and of course the national folks, the Homeland Security folks, have lots more tips for you on making this October a very secure one for you. So, very good. Here's a topic I wanted to talk a little bit about today, and I know I'm kind of springing it on you folks, but I know you all have opinions on it. In California, they passed a law on and the headlines on the websites, of course. They call it revenge porn legislation, and most other places that it's there's a phenomenon called cyber revenge, which is taking off after somebody that's done something bad for you, and you go online and post bad things about them on various different websites. This happens to be an area of concern for a lot of folks, but there are that's not the only example of cyber revenge, but the question is do we need legislation to protect us from people that, I guess, all the way from bullying to write out slander online? Is this a good step in that direction, I guess, is my question.
Well, CNN defines revenge porn in the article, as also called cyber revenge, as the act of posting sexual photos of an ex-lover online for vengeance. The photos were typically exchanged consensually over the course of a relationship and meant only for the other person. So this law was signed just this week on Tuesday, I believe it
right,
was.
Right, right.
Trying to cut back on that, to ban that. And actually, there's a $1,000 fine by distributing those images and possibility of jail time.
And that only applies if that person that posted that was the photographer, was the person that took, and I'm using the word photographer loosely if you've seen any of these pictures, but the actual person that took that. So if it was a selfie, you know, picture, and somebody else posted it, they're apparently not being prosecuted for this. So it gets kind of detailed on
murky waters, I would say. I mean, I think it comes back to like some I don't even want to say best practices of the internet. I just want to say common sense.
Yeah.
And
I was trying in the car, and I had a little windshield time. I was trying to figure out how to explain to our audience exactly what we're talking about today, because I just wonder. I don't think they understand the scope and the depth of how many photos of people there are out there that people would not want posted to the internet. And I mean, we talked about Samsung, the commercial that was kind of pimping the iPhone there for a while, where the lady makes the video for the guy and he's leaving to go to the airport, and they touch phones, and she goes, "Oh, you have to watch this one when the kids aren't there," you know, kind of a thing. And
yep.
And I think that's exactly what we're talking about is
sure.
People then taking that video that's meant from, you know, to be very personal between one person and another, and putting it out there for everybody. And not only, you know, just sharing it with their buddies, but this is meant to cause harm. It
yeah.
really is.
Yeah, you know, your question, is it good that we have this legislation?
Yes.
I would look at that two ways. You know, the first way, and I think a lot of people would agree with this, is you don't need specific legislation for that, because there's lots of laws that could incorporate that libel, slander,
sure.
that you could prosecute under, that maybe we don't need another law. And I might agree with that. However, when a specific thing like this comes up that people are outraged by or is being a problem, you know, making a new law for it may not necessarily be useful in the prosecution of it, but it is useful for people like us to talk about for awareness, so people know that this happens. And when it comes from the government, it's a lot different than when it comes from, say, you know, NBC, and they do a story on it, and like, you know, it might not hit a bunch of people, but if a law comes out, you know, that is easier to find out, and it sounds more official, and it certainly heightens awareness. So that, I think, is good. You know, I had a similar discussion with somebody about texting and driving laws, and he said, well, they don't need to be any, because distracted driving is already a law, so we don't need another law. I said, yeah, that's true, except for think of how much press no texting laws have really brought to the subject. So in that case, I think they are useful.
Are parents, when they hand over this electronic device to their little Johnny or little Susie, you know, are they properly explaining that, hey, this thing's got a camera in it, and these are the things that you really don't want to do? Because when I was growing up, we didn't have cell phones. The opportunity, it was not with me 24 hours a day like these devices are with the kids these days. And so, you know, I mean, seriously, when people go to the bathroom, they're taking their phones because they're checking websites, they're doing other things, or when they're going on a date, they're taking their phones. These are not opportunities for this type of activity to have happened when most of our listening audience, and when we were kids, the opportunity was not there. So this is,
I think we're talking, yeah, almost about a larger issue as we adopt new technology and it becomes more permanent part of our life. You know, I think back to when I was an elementary school kid, we had keyboarding, you know, and I know a lot of schools are getting rid of keyboarding because these children already know how to type.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just these keyboards are becoming attached to their hand with a phone. But I think it's almost like, instead of keyboarding, now we need computer etiquette or technology etiquette. I shouldn't even say computer. I think whether that starts at the home or even in the school, I think it's just like we learn, you know, common courtesy and manners and etiquette, that it almost... It's not going away, right? Technology is definitely staying here. So how can we educate the polite way to use it? Even, the, you know, answering phone calls in the middle of conversations or people texting while I'm trying to listen to you. You know, let's put our phones in our pockets. Let's look at the person in the eye and have a real conversation. So I think it's a bigger topic.
Yeah, I do too.
Well, I mean, what I would say about that is, you know, of course it's important for parents and elders to teach kids about the right way to do things. However, I think a lot can be learned from people that grow up with digital devices. They're certainly more aware of capabilities and how things work than people, my age and older that maybe don't understand that if you take a picture of something and you send it to somebody that it can be found or hacked. I find a lot more awareness with younger people about the possibilities of data loss and data theft than I ever get from the older people. And that's my opinion. I don't have any data to back this up. Mm-hmm. But I suspect as people grow up with these stories that are leaked, this politician sends this thing, this star sends this thing, I think they're more aware and more hyper-aware of the capabilities and possibilities. Yeah. Than
believe
maybe
me,
we
lessons
are
being learned in every middle school and every high school. I want to say across the nation, even in South Dakota, every day when a young person makes that bad judgment and sends that Snapchat that wasn't meant to be saved, it was meant to go away, but the other person on the other end has the ability to, you know, to snap the Snapchat.
Yep.
You know, lessons are being learned every day in our schools, and it's horrible that it's happening to somebody that's maybe of that state of mind at the moment or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think they are the one possibly good thing coming out of some of this is that people are going, oh yeah, you know, I probably shouldn't take this picture I'm about to because it's going to be shared.
Well, I like to think of it as like a rule of thumb, I would say, is like the grandparents rule. Like when you're posting anything online, know that someday when you're a grandparent, grandfather, grandmother, that your grandkids will be able to find this stuff, that you're leaving a digital legacy behind you. You know, like I have to go to a trunk in my parents' basement to open it up and dig through photos and mail clippings and letters to learn more about my grandparents. Not the case. Someday when I have grandkids, they can see the photos, the videos, the blog posts, everything that I put. I mean, you're creating a digital legacy.
Yeah. So the phone maybe needs to be aware that the person that's using it most of the time is a younger person, and then they take a picture and they go, hey, you know, would you send this to your grandparents? Because I can, you know, the phone knows if it's a face or, you know, it could have other recognition built into it. It could say, hey, are you sure?
Yeah, and you know, I always think, you know, we're it doesn't seem like it, but we're really in the infancy of all of this social media and technology. It's just going to get more prevalent. So, you know, everybody's learning all at once right now, and I think the youngest generation is going to be way more adept than we are.
It makes me laugh thinking of, you know, whoever's running for president in 2030. I don't know if that's an election year or not, but it won't be a matter of like who has dirt and who doesn't. It's like who's going to have more dirt, right?
It'd be
like
32.
Whose dirt's going to be worse? Okay,
yeah.
32.
Yeah.
28, 32.
Yep. It's crazy. But anyway, I digress. Let's move on. There's another website I want to talk about. Actually, a couple more on today's show.
We only got a couple
minutes here. Yeah, we only have a couple of minutes, but a story of intrigue and hitmen and crime and other things. And that is the Silk Road story that's hit.
I don't know if I can even do this in a minute, but I'll try. There's a site called Silk Road that became a sort of a marketplace, or they called it quote e-commerce for basically nefarious things, selling drugs and serious other crimes using what's called Bitcoin, which I don't know if we've talked about Bitcoin on the show.
We have, but
I think we have. It's basically electronic. It's cyber money, essentially, that has a currency, and there's a marketplace for it. And the story goes that, you know, the government, the FBI was able to infiltrate the site and kind of laying low and being underground for a while. Then I was able to catch a transaction, I believe, for a large amount of heroin, I think it was. And one of the employees was kind of involved in that transaction. Apparently the CEO and founder then, rumors has it, that tried to hire a hitman to murder the employee so that he was just mysteriously gone and not involved in the scandal. And it's a big mess, but you can Google, just type in Silk Road into Google, and it seems like something that more or less could be a Hollywood movie in 5 years.
They called it the Amazon.com of Vice.
Yeah, which is over explaining it, I think, and not entirely accurate, but
really
certain and important. Well, it wasn't Amazon, but it was a marketplace.
Well, no, he's comparing it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I know. I'm just saying it was not on that same scale, I don't think.
Oh, no, no. It was very underground, very small.
Yeah, right.
All right. But, well, all right. Nevertheless, and you said this could be a Hollywood movie.
Sure.
And it probably will be.
You were reading the article that it was all fiction, and it was like, wait, this is real.
Yeah,
yep, indeed.
Absolutely. So does that have
such
anything?
Such a downer show. I just feel like we're talking about like hacks and that.
Microsoft is throwing out Bill Gates or wants
Yikes.
To.
And 2 years ago tomorrow, Steve Jobs died. So any other down news we can talk about?
I don't know. We're going to get snowed on tomorrow or something.
Oh, there you go. It's going to rain.
It's already being snowed on out West River. So those,
well, you don't have to rake this weekend there. Probably because it'll be too wet.
Hobo so, days.
It's Hobo
Brookings.
Days and Dakota days.
Oh.
Is it really this weekend?
Yeah, yeah. Wow. I'm serious. The difference is it's going to be 72 and clear in the dome on Saturday for the football game.
And the kids can't get in trouble 2 weekends in a row.
So, yeah, they can't go to Brookings and then to Vermilion.
Well, although they probably will.
We didn't recommend that. A lot of folks are doing one night in one city and one night in the other. So that's all going to work.
Well, just make sure you have your DD and we'll be good.
Absolutely. Be safe no matter what part of the state you're in and what you're doing. We want you to be cyber safe on the show, and we also want you to be safe so you can listen to us again in a couple of weeks here on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. Reminder to listeners, if you'd like a list of the links that we talked about on today's show, facebook.com/techradio is the place you need to go for that. And again, thanking our folks today on the panel, Joel Brovelite, thank you so much. Good luck tomorrow night. John D. Meyer, good luck next Friday.
Thank you.
I wish you all the best. And of course, Jeff Litterick and Peer, thank you so much for taking the time, Jeff. We appreciate it very much.
Good luck to you, too.
Yep. So thank you, panelists, and reminder to listeners, listen.sdpb.org if you'd like to listen to the show again. We podcast everything, and go there for copies of the show. And stay tuned to South Dakota Public Broadcasting. NPR News is next, followed by Talk of the Nation, Science Friday.